Thrill Me.
This show is part of the Thrill Me Podcast Network. Experience more on Facebook and YouTube.
Core memory unlocked.
Horror.
15 years ago, I was told there was nothing left.
Better hurry up. Live or die. Make your choice.
A ver, hijo de la chingada. Deja de estar viendo memes, pendejo.
A la verga, me vale verga, perro. Y cállate a la verga, cállate.
Welcome in to a brand new Core Memory Unlocked Horror. And this is the public version. We're doing this because, as you can tell by my hat, his shirt, and my shirt.
Oh.
That's right. Yes, have some. Yes, we are celebrating Ghostbusters Week here at the Thrill Me Podcast Network, and we're kicking it off with the oldie, the original, Ghostbusters. And we're doing this for a week-long kind of event because it's all going to finish up Thursday, March 21st at the Cinema Cafe Edinburgh in Virginia. So if you are in Virginia, if you want to come out at 8:30 p.m. beforehand, at 7:45, we're doing the pre-show. We're doing some Ghostbusters trivia for some fantastic prizes. I'm talking Ghostbuster merch. I'm talking blankets. I'm talking LCD lights. I'm also talking Cinema Cafe tickets. That's right. They're going to pop us in some tickets for the Cinema Cafe. So if you want to have fun with us on Ghostbusters Frozen Empire premiere night, the 8:30 showing, come on out to 1864 Edinburgh Lane, Chesapeake, Virginia, 23322. That's what we're doing.
Hope to see some of you out there. I know we got some Virginia listeners. I know we got
Virginia fans. And when we posted about it on our socials, it seemed that people were very interested. So
buy your tickets. They're on sale.
Yeah, they're on sale now. I'll have it in the description of this video that you can go do that. Make sure you click on the 8:30 showing. We will be out in the lobby. We will be by the biggest stand of Ghostbusters Frozen Empire doing trivia, and we're doing the live Haunters there as well. So, so much fun to be had. But that is later on. This is the start. This is the OG, 1984's Ghostbusters. And I feel like everybody's seen it. I know we're going to talk memories of our own, but just in case, if you're one of the sad souls that has not seen this, I guess we'll show you the trailer for this movie.
Go ask your parents if you can rent it on Amazon.
Just pay that $1.99 of beautiful Bezos money to watch it. All right, so supposedly this is the classic trailer. Let's see if it is, and we can say if we got some good thoughts on it or not. Here we go. It is PG. I don't know. It looks kind of crisp. It looks kind of clean.
Definitely it. Ghosts.
Oh, yeah.
Hello, Ghostbusters.
They're real.
You do?
Oh, they're playing it like a horror movie.
Yeah,
they
are. And then we drop SNL on you.
Yeah, exactly. What the hell is that?
Yeah. Unlicensed vehicle.
Hey, anybody see a ghost?
They catch the ghost that won't stay dead. They're armed.
Played up our inside theme.
They're dangerous.
Try to imagine all life as you know it stopping instantaneously and every molecule in your body exploding at the speed of light.
Right, that's bad. Okay. All right, important safety tip.
Thanks, E-God.
They're professionals.
I'm the chairman of the largest paranormal removal company in America.
You see it?
hell nice. That stands between you and the end of the world.
The city is headed for a disaster of biblical proportion. Real wrath of God type stuff. Fire and brimstone coming down from the sky. Human sacrifice, dogs and cats living together. Mass hysteria. Your girlfriend lives in the corner penthouse of Spook Central.
You want this body?
Is this a trick question?
Got your stick.
Hold.
Okay. Make him hard. Holy shit! That made the trailer.
The '80s. Oh, that reminds me. What are we talking about now?
Sigourney Weaver, Harold Ramis, Rick Moranis, coming to save the world.
Yes.
Ghostbusters.
Yes.
We came. We kicked its
ass. Oh wow! All right, that was kind of cool. Stop sharing. That was actually pretty wicked. I enjoyed that.
That was. I wouldn't. You know what? If that's what I first thing I saw, I wouldn't know what to think. I wouldn't know if I was going into a comedy or a horror film. It's more comedy than horror. Like it's both, but.
You're right,
but I wouldn't know really what I was walking into because they really towed the line on leaning into the horror elements of it and back on some of the comedy.
Yeah, it's really funny because, I mean, if you know me, I'm huge into horror and I love comedy. And I think that's why this movie has always stand the test of time for me is because it is a beautiful blending of both. And not to say other movies can't do it super well. I mean, Beetlejuice, Gremlins, all these movies do it super well, but there's something that's always got me about Ghostbusters. And that carried through other things like Saturday Night Live and stuff like that. So I think this movie just hit on everything that I love, even personally now, where I think of like improv and kind of the blending of genres. I think this movie just encapsulates all of it.
Yeah, this film is, to me, it's a comedy that is timeless. At this point, a lot of it, you know, a lot of it just hits. A lot of it is really just, it's the perfect blend of if you want to introduce somebody to horror that's not really a fan of it, this is a great way to go. And it's not as extreme as like a Shaun of the Dead, which is kind of, you know, like is an R-rated version of this. They lean into the horror a lot more than Ghostbusters. Mm-hmm. But I do remember when I was like, it's between that age, the age of like 12 and 16, where you want to like pull all nighters and shit. You know what I'm talking about in life? Whereas as a teenage boy, where you're like, I'm not going to sleep in the summer. I remember watching Ghostbusters in between one of those times, like, and it was the however many time I watched the film.
Right.
But it was one of those like 4 a.m. times, lights out. And it was the first time it clicked to me that, because I had just always viewed it as a comedy with like Ghost. Comedy Ghost. But that was the first time, like a 4 o'clock in the morning viewing with the lights off, where like hearing them be like, no, like Judgment Day, the end of days, biblical times. I was like, oh, this film, like, and that makes sense too, because about that age, it's no more about like, oh, the comedy, the goofiness, like, oh, I can cling on to these characters and enjoy it for that. You're starting, you know, you are starting to realize more substance and depth of the stories being told. So that was the first time that I was like, holy crap, this is a great horror movie. Like, this is a horror movie. This is scary. Like, I can watch this as just a scary movie or as a comedy. But yeah, it nails, dude. And the cast is, legendary. Like, for the 80s, the cast is huge. But now, looking back on it 40 years later, this is a legendary cast. Like Harold Ramis was big at this point. Bill Murray was
as a director too. Like Harold Ramis was big as a writer director. So to actually get him to also star in it. And I remember this also making me want to find other things. Like that's the thing.
Stripes. This made me find Stripes.
Exactly. Like, wait a second. You're telling me Ivan Reitman, Harold Ramis, and Bill Murray's worked together before? And
they I can watch it.
Right. And then you add in like John Candy and Judge Reinhold in that. Like, it's PJ Souls. Like, it's wild to me how awesome this is. A gateway. It's, again, it's that gateway comedy and horror, whichever direction you want to go.
An 80s gateway. And if you ever, I'd also say, if you ever really want like to really understand the Saturday Night Live craze and kind of that, like, this film is a great way, again, to like gateway into that, to realize, like, coming into this movie, like seeing that trailer again, like, I'm like, what the hell am I getting from guys that I know who solely come from Saturday Night Live? Like, Dan Aykroyd is the guy that the Bassmaster seller, like the Bass seller, like, you know,
Bassmaster is second of favorite shows.
Bill Murray's the lounge singer singing about the Star Wars. It's the what the hell, you know? And again, Harold Ramis, you're like, wait, but they did Stripes and he's written Caddyshack, and like, this is what the hell am I getting here? You know, you have no idea, and then it turns out to be a timeless comedy classic to me, although some people don't agree with that.
I guess we can jump into that. And I think that's the difference of this Core Memory Unlocked and almost why we saved it for a special time, is because what is there to say that hasn't already been said, especially from the Haunters family? I mean, I'm drinking out of the cup. We talk about it all the time, of going to HHN and like getting it there. We've seen this movie a million times. We have a commentary somewhere out in the world. I'm sure if you
know we ever released that commentary.
I think we did. I think it's out. I'll have to make sure. I think it's out.
We got a good job these days. Can we? It's be 86 if that exists, because I don't remember what happened that time. No, actually,
it happened in the 80s.
I do think that commentary exists because, you know, to kind of piggyback on your thing, like, what haven't we said? If you don't know at this point, my feelings on Dana Barrett, and specifically Zool. This is the moment Wonderful knew that this ring was going to be with a female on the other end, all right? 3-year-old me didn't know much of what was going on. Saw pretty colors, saw a giant marshmallow, saw a dick covered in, you know, get what he deserves. But I'll tell you what, when I saw some hands coming out of a chair, I went, I like women.
This is where that man was born. He went from a boy to a man.
I did.
To ectoplasm everywhere, baby.
It dropped. That's when they dropped. That was the day they dropped. I watched Ghostbusters and when Dana Barrett got possessed, they dropped.
So now you know, people.
Now you know the story. I was like, ooh.
It's not a simple Google search, so I don't know if it's still up there. Maybe it's not. Maybe it did not stand the test of time.
I really don't know if it ever got released.
Yeah.
But
this being said, you brought up something to my attention. So go ahead.
Okay, so it was screencrush.com that I came across this article 2 weeks ago or so. And It was an article that was talking about, as times continue to change, certain jokes, plot details, blah, 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 that we once loved really don't age well. In fact, they become cringe. So it was a story about the most cringe, once-loved movies. And it had, like, you know, it made sense. Like, Crazy Stupid Love is on the list. Like, yeah, that entire film is totally outrageous.
I love that movie.
I enjoy that movie, but let's be real. That movie is totally...
I showed Brooke that movie for the first time 2 years ago, and she had a ball when that reveal happened.
Oh my God, that reveal is incredible! But you know, let's be real, it was always weird with the kid with the babysitter. That was always
That was always a weird subplot. I get that.
But it also has American Pie on the list, American Beauty, stuff like that. But at the top of the list, it had Ghostbusters, and their reasoning. Their reasoning. This is what they wrote. Despite launching a lengthy franchise and despite its nerdy cult movie status, we have to admit to ourselves, the original Ghostbusters movie is pretty bad. Its horror comedy jokes don't land. What? Its characters are tough to root for. What? The effects are clunky. What? And the surprise romance at the end is mostly perfunctory. I don't know. They're using a big word there. They also say that the stuff that made Bill Murray such a beloved comedic star is mainly annoying, and Sigourney Weaver is reduced to a ghost-possessed eye candy. For one of the most iconic horror movies from the 80s, it falls flat when you actually sit down and watch it. The costumes are cool, though. I've watched this movie, again, I...
We watched it to prep this, for this.
Yeah, for this.
Yeah.
You want to say clunky graphics these days? The only thing that, like, the only thing that even comes across as clunky to me these days is when Rick Moranis is being chased. But I don't view that as bad.
That's
with, with the ghost, with the dog. I don't even view that as bad, though, because I'm like,
right,
yo, for that's still better than what Madam Web did.
Right, right. And not only
yes,
that,
Madam Web is out here taking shots from the Ghostbusters.
I know. We don't have to now. My problem with that article is, simply put, whoever that is, the youngin that's writing it, obviously is writing it for a clickbait scenario to get that comment. So, because there's nothing about its basis that makes sense. Like, you're talking about special effects from the 80s. To compare that to what Poltergeist did, to compare that to what Nightmare on Elm Street did, it's pretty fucking good. And then, if you're going to talk that way, then you might as well just keep going back. Like, go back in time. How about you say your new number one most cringe is Abbott and Costello? Like, you can't do that. You're not allowed to do that to a timeless classic like this, where my kid literally watches this. And one of my favorite things about Ghostbusters is the fact that when I was a kid, there were scenes that I roared for. And then when I became a teenager, there was a scene that I roared for. And then when I was an adult, like, there's just so many layers.
Dan Aykroyd, I wish I could cross-eye.
There's so many layers of comedy in this that are fantastic. That trailer did such a good job of highlighting the horror, because the opening scene is scary. I know the chair does it for you, but the chair scene is scary. Like,
it's scary. There are
elements to this where I think it's a perfect balance of horror and comedy, and there's a reason why it's lasted this test of time. And I'm sorry, Scream Crush or Rant or whoever the fuck you are.
It's Scream Crush.
You're wrong. You're just wrong.
I think
it's okay. It's okay.
I think you're right. It's a clickbaity thing because, I mean, you have a new movie coming out. That's why we're doing the Ghostbusters week. That's why we're back to talking about this film that inspired both of us in many different ways. Like, this is a movie that, and I think you nailed it a moment ago. It's kind of like what I said. By the time I got to, like, that teenage age, I started to pick up on certain themes and elements of the movie that I never noticed for, you know, the first 13 years of watching it. For the first 13 years of watching it, it was just kind of like this very fluffy, goofy, ha ha ha, look at this cool, you know, they got proton packs. This is so cool.
Oh my God, that ghost is eating a lot of hot dogs.
Exactly. Like, oh my God, the cab ghost is scary. I'm going to have nightmares from that.
Right.
You know, but like getting that one little scare, kind of like I didn't realize how scary Pee-wee was. Like, I knew there was a scary moment in Pee-wee, but then the more I rewatch it, the more I'm like, oh, you know, the clown bit didn't scare me as a kid, but that's pretty fucking creepy. Oh, the dinosaur bit is actually pretty scary as well. I like dinosaurs, so as a kid, when I saw a flaming dinosaur, I was like, oh, I didn't realize his bike was being destroyed. I didn't grasp that at 5, but I grasped it at like 12 and 13, where I was like, oh, a little darker. But then, I get a little older as well, and I start picking up. So it's comedy nails all the way through. Mm-hmm. And I'm still laughing at jokes, even when I know the gag is coming. Mm-hmm. And I love, like, at this point, this is also a film that I'd say I watched it so many times that I don't even know if there's anything, like, background-wise now I can pick up now. Like, after, like, for instance, when they go into the ballroom, I notice Venkman in the background still being all funky from
still
the, like,
doing the funky
stuff. He's still doing the, because he's funky. Like, there's really nothing anymore that catches me where I'm like, oh, I never noticed that because I've watched it that much.
I love that you said that because it happened to me last night. I mean, we all know Walter Peck is dickless. Okay, this man has no dick. And you
that's
know
what I heard.
How much it's what I heard, but we know how much he does not like Venkman. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't like Venkman so much. I didn't catch on to this for some reason, but I got it this time. When he first meets Bill Murray and he goes in there, he goes, Mr. Venkman, and what do you do? He's like, I'm a doctor. And he's like, a doctor of what, Mr. Venkman? Mm-hmm. And he's like, I got parapsychology, psychology. And they go on and he was like, and he still called him Mr. Venkman. He fucking hates him so much. He does not acknowledge that he is a doctor and never calls him Dr. Venkman.
And that's why when I see people do the, oh, this all could have been avoided if he had just allowed him. No, there's a reason why he's being a prick back to him. Because he knows that Peck is being condescending to him. The moment Peck meets him, he is being condescending. And you're right. He's calling him Mr. Venkman the whole time when he is Dr. Venkman. And so much so that even when they're getting kicked out of Columbia University, he's still being called Dr. Venkman. Now, granted, he's being undercut, but at least the head of Columbia has enough decency. I'm like, I'm going to not trail off anymore. But at least he has the decency to still call him a doctor, although a shoddy one at best.
Right.
While Peck shows up and is instantly like, what are you a doctor in? Okay, whatever. I'm still not calling you doctor, even though you clearly have a degree beyond me. And Venkman is smart enough. Although he comes across dumb the entire time, you know, he didn't study. Maybe he did.
No study.
But he knows. He's smart enough to realize an uppity prick the minute they walk in that's going to start undermining him. So I don't, you know, I totally get. Like, that's why I don't think that's – because people point to that as being a bit of like, oh, well, if he just did it. No, that's why he doesn't do it, because he's being undermined. So he's saying, fuck this guy.
No, the whole time the EPA would not – if it happens, that containment unit still blows up. This is an unregistered thing. It's just like the government wanting the piece of the pie. Like, they were doing something that goes beyond. And it's just like Marvel. It kind of goes to, like, Civil War, where you have people that want to do the Sokovia Accords while others don't. It's the same kind of deal. You just got to pick your side, which I think is going to be interesting, because I think this is what's going to kind of play in Frozen Empire with Dickless coming back. There's got to be some kind of thing that's coming into play here.
Yeah, I agree with you, especially with him looking like he's now in the mayor's office. But maybe we do a video on that.
What? Like
pitch our Frozen Empire.
Oh, no, I don't want to pitch a Frozen Empire.
You don't want to do that? No, I don't want to do that. Yeah, you're right. Because if I end up pitching a better movie than what I get, I'm going
to
be pissed.
You're just going to pitch a different movie, and that's not what not what this is about. But I would love to do, like, a Frozen Empire, like, post thing. Like, does it fit four? Like, do all four movies fit? Does this feel good? No, I don't know. There's not much, like I say, and I think the movie elevates itself so much where there's a crescendo to the Zool, the gatekeeper, the keymaster, which absolutely love that, obviously. And then getting Gozer, I think Gozer was just this phenomenal, like, ultra ghost demon thing, and I think plays later on, obviously, but it with the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man, you don't get a lot of movies that really do build to this big, meaningful end that, like, even Stay Puft, it just popped in his head. Like, that's just such a Ray moment that I love.
Yeah. And I mean, it's, you're right, the crescendo to it, you know, sitting back and thinking about it, you get, it really is kind of a perfectly layered film all the way through, not overdoing it with the ghosts and stuff like that. I will say this time around, I did have a lot of thoughts just also because of that article and stuff. Like, I did find myself thinking of the female Ghostbusters film a lot. And not and listen, we've been on the record a lot as well with how much we love that film. But I started thinking about the differences kind of in the stories and, like, how this one did crescendo and kind of built up to its big moment with the ghost, where that one really did throw a lot more ghost at you throughout, you know, the course of the film, to really focus in on the CGI. And I think that's why the original Ghostbusters has stood the test of time so much, because it is a really well-layered story. It's not a studio-produced movie like the Oddish trailer did with the, you know, they made a great, the females did what the studio wanted done and mm-hmm. made a damn good movie out of it. Yeah. But the OG Ghostbusters does play like no studio really did fuck around with it. Like they didn't care much. Like they were allowed to be.
It was very rock star because like, again, one of the facts that I've picked up on is like when they do the scenes where they're running down New York City, they don't have a license, a permit to do that. That's them just doing. So when everybody's looking at them goofy, like it's because they're like, what the shit is going? Why is Saturday Night Live running down the street?
Yeah. Is that Bill Murray? What the fuck is he wearing? What's right. Like, actually, no, hold on. Let me get into my New Yorker. Like, fucking Bill Murray and fucking Dan Aykroyd. Fuck that thing on that back. Ow! Hey. The loud singer.
The loud singer. That's fantastic. But no, and to also hit on back to that article, just to kind of wrap that up, because I love that that's the theme of this. This whole like nobody to root for, what did they present themselves not to root for? I mean, Winston is the working man. Who's like kind of lovable. Like you, I get that he was not the advertised person in the movie, but when you leave it, like he's one of them and you want Winston back on the team for every sequel. And then
that's why we don't watch Egon, the VHS version of the film.
Why do you say that? What about the VHS? What happened?
You don't know how the VHS, because of how the TVs used to be, the VHS copy on the TVs, that scene at the end when the four of them are walking up.
Yeah.
There's no only three way. Of them. There's only three of them on the VHS, baby.
Oh man. He got strapped from the 4-3 ratio. Yep. Damn.
The old TV ratio went whoop. So whoop. And there's our three main.
That sucks. Then you got Egon, who is just adorable from his nerdiness. Ray is also a guy that you kind of like, you feel.
I love Ray.
Just, you feel for him because you can tell like he loves everybody and he wants to do this. Like he's in love with being a Ghostbuster and you fall for that. If that article literally was just written by a person to be like, I don't like Bill Murray and this is why.
Yeah. And you know,
yeah, I get it. He likes women. It's the 1980s, so he's playing that character. Bill Murray is a pro at playing, like, I like women. I get
But here's where I'll actually take even more issue with it.
Umbridge, yeah.
Because, okay, sure, he's playing that character, but once he meets Dana, he becomes mainly fixated on, oh, I'm going to prove myself to her.
What does he say? He says, I'm going calling my shot.
Yeah.
I am madly in love with you.
Then she threw me out.
She thought I was a creep. She thought I was a geek. You are so odd. Yeah. I got it.
Yeah.
I'll prove myself to you.
And he does. But where I take bigger umbrage is moving into the sequel while they are not together. We learn that he is the one that torpedoed that because of his fear of commitment. And he did not move on and continue womanizing. He has still been hung up on her, so much so that he was pretty much went off to make a fake psychic show and became pretty much a scam artist from that point on. Like, really did become what Columbia's president was like, this is what you are. You are actually more what Data said. You are, you're a hustler.
Right.
You're more of a game show host, and he became a host.
Right.
We see that.
That's fantastic.
It was still Data, and he continues a downfall because he screwed up with Dana and then gets her back. And then where do we learn they are now? They're still together.
Yeah. No, you're right. And like, they end up, and then by afterlife, they're still together. So.
And. She gets to do the quiz. She gets to do the buzz thing on him, showing him that he was being a creep in the '80s. So
the character has come
full circle. Crazy how that can happen. So when I saw that article and I knew we were talking about this, I was like, I'm going to bring it up. Cause again, we've talked about this movie a lot and how much this movie means to you when you saw it.
Yeah.
Myself being at a young age where you're just like, I don't know what the fuck I just, like, I'm too young to comprehend what I just watched, but I know that was amazing and I'm going to watch it again and again and again and again and again. And eventually I'm going to start learning all the things, you know, as you know, we can bring up the Ray dream sequence. As a kid, it made me chuckle, but for not the reason that
not why, you know. Like, what the heck is going on? It's just funny because it takes you out of, but then when you're older, you're like, oh, and then you find, like, you find the deleted scene and like, oh, they're in a castle, he's wearing a jacket and stuff, like things you don't catch up on. And also, again, why I love DVDs and stuff, like, there was a deleted scene. I can't remember if it's on my 4K version, but there's a deleted scene that unites this with Trading Places.
Oh, that is...
Or is it? No, that's not that. That's Coming to America. No. This one had Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd playing almost like his Caddyshack character. As homeless men. It was a scene where Lewis is running away from the dog and they're playing two homeless guys, and like Bill Murray's doing his shtick. Like,
oh, this. My God.
It's a wonderful scene.
Dan was doing his Caddyshack.
Yeah, ma'am.
Oh, gosh.
You gotta watch it. I don't know if Dan's doing Caddyshack because I know his voice was like this, but in Ghostbusters, it was like this. He was talking like this. Like, you could tell they were doing a, like, SNL
kind of
bit. Never seen it, look it. I'm sure it's on that.
No, I didn't even see that when I got to see it in theaters for the 35th in 2019. They showed a bunch of deleted scenes, like, beforehand, like the never before shown, and I was like, I feel like I've seen these.
And it's crazy because I know we're doing this in March. I know we're doing this in March, but in the same sense, this is the 40th anniversary of Ghostbusters. So.
And 35th for Ghostbusters
2. Yeah, so big things for the GB this year.
Oh, man, so much GB.
So much, we're going to ectoplasm everywhere.
Yeah, that's usually what happens in a GB.
Not wrong.
I haven't called it that since Mike and Bob. But I had to legally do that on the air because obviously I couldn't say the real word.
look at him. He's got another core memory unlocked.
I do. Oh, that's actually going to become the new wonderful show. Core Memory Unlocked, Radio Days.
I love it. Awesome. So that was Ghostbusters. This is Core Memory Unlocked Horror. Thank you for watching, listening, doing what you do. And one more time before we go. Thursday, March 21st, we will be at the Ghostbusters Frozen Empire premiere at the Edinburgh location of Cinema Cafe. Showtime for those tickets is 8:30. If you want to come have fun, play trivia, come at 7:45. And if you can't make it, we're doing the live haunted. You can watch along there. Bing, bang, boom. How you like that there? So I guess we'll catch you on the next one. And stay ectoplasm-y, my friends.
Ectoplasm all over the place.